I'm going to ask a favor. I lived in Scotland for 20 years, and I was really upset to see the police helicopter that crashed into the pub there. So I'm going to ask that we give a thought to the folks in Glasgow, Scotland this evening. And now we're going to have a flag salute, and we have a really special guest this evening. I'm not going to say who else is with her. Well, her parents are with her. I guess I do have to say this. It's Amelie Guerrero, and her dad is the president of the Oceano Community Services District, but tonight Amelie's the famous one. Could you start for us?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And if you want to come up here, I have some things for you. And we can do photos. You're welcome, parents, if you do want to come up. And your sister's on TV, so come on up. And what we have for you tonight is a certificate and also some things to help you with your homework. And if you want to shake everybody's hand, start up there with
Hello.
Thank you.
Well, I was right.
Wow. You wouldn't have known who I was if you hadn't put it back there.
It'll hit you in the toe, didn't it?
Appreciate it.
So cool.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you. Nicely done.
Very nicely done. Thank you. Almost lost Donna on that one, right?
Yeah. Comes, and everybody scooch in a bit, and then you can follow us.
So, our second closed
session
is on this letter, huh? Issue of the
country
litigation. No,
it's RWPCD.
RWPCD.
Oh, I thought it was this.
So while we're at it, I don't know that I actually introduced Mr. and Mrs. Guerrero, who are Oceano residents and the chair of the Oceano Community Services District. And also your little brother's here. Is that right? There he is. And is a school? Do we have a school principal or a teacher who spends city attorney?
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council members. On Monday, November 4th, the City Council met on two items in closed session, the first one being Lopers versus City of Grover Beach, the second RWQCB versus City of Grover Beach. The council reconvened into open session and announced there were no applicable actions taken.
Thank you very much. And we move now to the agenda review. But before we start that, I would like to say to the parents, you know, on Channel 20, you can see you can see the repeats, but maybe the kids don't know that. And also for the public, if you'd like an agenda for this evening, they are over on the table there. And you can also preview this or review this on television twice a week. And it's all listed at the front of the agenda. It's about the third box down. So, agenda review. Anybody have any requests on that? No. I do have. I have one. I handed out the excerpts from the 2013 Central Coast Economic Forecast, and some of it is quite relevant to our discussion about the lodge this evening in terms of what's happening in the hotel industry and the tourism industry. So, with the council's permission, I would like to present a little bit of that committee report, my EVC committee report, perhaps at some point during our Grover Beach Lodge and Conference Center hearing.
Sure.
Yeah. Is that okay?
I think so.
Okay, thanks. So, okay.
Then I'll move approval of the agenda as modified.
I'll second that.
Moved by Councilmember Lee, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Bright. Good. We don't need a roll call. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, great. So we have nothing on the ceremonial calendar and public communications. We can give you 3 minutes. You don't have to take 3 minutes, but anybody who wants to speak on anything that's not on the agenda, we're opening up for that just now. So if you'd like to do that, please come forward.
Good evening. Peter Keith, Grover Beach. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this evening. Last month, there was a vote by this council regarding the fate of the People's Kitchen. It wasn't a unanimous vote, but it was certainly close to it and enough to displace them, even after they had gotten an extension. And I've been grievously concerned about what might happen and what is happening to the People's Kitchen and the people that they serve. There are approximately 300 to 350 of a lot of homeless people in this county, and they vary in distinction. Some people are passing through. Maybe they're hobos. Some people are vagrants. Other people are families and children and moms and dads and husbands and wives and single people who simply can't avail themselves of enough money to support themselves for whatever reason, because they've had some economic tragedy, because they've had some past, something in the past happen to them, because they lost their job, because they live paycheck to paycheck. I think that as a council, and perhaps as an entire South County with three incorporated communities and Oceano, which is controlled by or overseen by the county, I think that with the resources that we have, there must be a way that we can put People's Kitchen back on their feet instead of what they're doing now, which is just going from place to place, handing out box food that's not necessarily hot, and then scrambling to another location. I don't think it's not the right way to do these things. I'm hoping that you, each of you, as a council combined, will find a way to put some kind of a program together, to put something together so that the people who are in need can get a hot meal once a day. Yes, there are many other programs out there, loaves and fishes and all sorts of things. This is a specialty item. And I just hate to see people who don't have enough go hungry. I think there are ways that we, you, us, the community, can find to alleviate some of the difficulties that have been, that you've heard about. Those kinds of things that business people and homeowners have heard about. It's really not that terrible. It's not that bad. I think with a specific place and certain rules in place that everyone agrees upon and enforces, I think that we can find a place for People's Kitchen. I hope you will. They've been in so many different places for the last 20 years, they just can't seem to find a permanent, dedicated facility that they can serve out of and help make people's lives a little bit better. This is America. Having people that hungry living in cars is not right. Thank you for the time. I know I went over. Thank you for the extra bit.
Thank you, Peter.
80 years old, plus. And you know, you politicians should get in a bus or limousine and travel those miles and see what's out there. You're damn lucky you got that Pacific Ocean, because if you didn't have it, those people don't have it out there. And you know, I was going across 166 and I got derailed there because of Caltrans. And I remember back when, I want 9 minutes because I haven't been here 3 months.
Three's your
Reagan
limit.
Was governor, and he had the contract for 166 and 46 way back when he's governor. But like all politicians and everything, it gets derailed. And here, these trucks run across country on 166, 46. Of course, they're finally getting four lanes up there. But then, as I got across there, there's no signs out there to tell you where to go to. I'm really tired and exhausted because I've been to the ranch, a drought here. And as I'm going across there, it's dry out there. The cattlemen are having a tough time. I knew that before I left. The government shut down for 30 days. They get a big salary. They get a huge retirement plan. They get benefits and they get vacation. When I worked for Safeway, I had to work 3 years before I got 1 week. And that was in the 50s, 60s, 70s. But as I got across there, I stopped at the Needles there, and the Colorado River is really small. And I wonder, the farmers were telling me that it doesn't go all the way out through Mexico. it's drying up. And then I get up there to the Colorado Divide, and the water goes west and the water goes east. I'm wondering how many people know that. I bet you these kids who go to the high school, they wouldn't know what the hell a divide is. But then they had signs that were misleading. The Colorado River picks up the west, and the Missouri and the Mississippi picks up the east, and they had to go into the Atlantic Ocean. It's just stuff out there like that, you know. We go to the moon, we go to Mars, we go everywhere, but we don't have any damn common sense, practical experience, and common knowledge. There was an old Safeway store out there as I got down, and I'm looking at my AAA. I'm following it. I know it because I've been across country 23 times since 1960 in a car or a pickup.
Thank
you.
You know,
I may not be here.
Okay.
But I'm going to tell you, you're lucky you got it.
Is there anyone else who'd like to come forward during public comment? You can come and get in line behind Mr. Weissman.
Houses, $59,000 compared to your four, five.
Anybody else who wanted to speak tonight? Nope. Okay, last call. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. And I did want to comment on Mr. Keith's remarks and a couple of things. One is that I have been approached by a number of people who really would like to help and don't know where to go to help. And I think that it would be quite helpful perhaps to have a community forum, a whole South County forum, to talk about it. We need to find out who could lead that. But I think it would be useful to see if we could get the community together to try to solve the problem. So, and the other thought is perhaps the council might want to consider doing putting it on our agenda. I don't know. I don't know if it's actually a city issue. It's really more of a community, five cities issue. But I did want to put that out there in case you all felt like it was something you wanted to put on a future agenda.
I'd be willing to put it on an agenda. I think we've the specific item of People's Kitchen we've talked through. There's also obviously the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, which is another larger organization for community or for regional issues. So perhaps the both of them would be participatory in that.
It would be helpful to hear from the Five Cities Homeless. Glenn, which one is it that you sit on? You're on the
Homeless Advisory. Homeless Services Oversight.
Okay. Yeah. So what is your thought? Do you think it would be helpful to?
My thought is getting the Five Cities Coalition, getting the individual groups together and then being a part of that, but along together with the cities, possibly the CSD from Oceano. Mm-hmm. I don't know if necessarily it would help agendizing something here as it would having them prepare something and inviting and attending something.
Inviting them to come and make a presentation?
Well, not so much making a presentation here, or they could do it here, but they need to spearhead it. The city,
right, I agree.
You know, they have to find a place, and you know, we can only help them by giving them permits if that's, I don't know what else the city can do. Financially, we can't do much. We can support, and by supporting, attending any sort of meeting that the coalition could put together.
So your vote is to support a forum?
Support a forum, but they would have to prepare they would need to set up the forum.
Right. Okay, and it's not an official vote. It's
not official.
Okay. Any other comments? Mr. Nichols, any comments?
Before you set up a forum, I would recommend that you sit down and talk to probably some members of the board of directors of the People's Kitchen and the Five Cities Homeless Coalition. They've been working on this project for a number of years. I was involved personally with it for a number of years. I'm a little frustrated with the operation. They're sitting on $1.7 million that they're doing nothing with. And it just drives me nuts that they come looking for help from the Grover Beach City Council. I just don't think it's appropriate. I really don't. I think if you as the mayor wanted to sit down and talk to those people and find out what they're doing, where they're going, and then come up with some sort of a concrete reason to bring the council into this and to sit down and have a discussion or a forum over it, then yes, I might be in favor of that.
Okay, but thank you. I'm just asking the question. I don't have a proposal that we do that. I'm not asking it because I want the council to do it. I'm just raising it to see where you all are. And my thought was not so much that I or we organize a forum, but that there should be one out there and that we certainly would want to look at supporting it, because you have some strong feelings. And I think there are a lot of people out there with some strong feelings, myself included, and I think it would be helpful to talk about it. So it sounds like we have consensus not to agendize it. And what I did want to also report on was that I had made a commitment to talk with the mayors in the county at the mayor's meeting about our people's kitchen and our homeless situation. I did do that, and the outcome was that I met with Mayor Ferrara from Arroyo Grande and Mayor Higginbotham from Pismo Beach, and we are going to meet again next Friday. We're meeting informally. We're not meeting on behalf of our cities. We're meeting because our communities have problems that we want to see if we can resolve. So we will be meeting again on Friday, and see where we can take all of this. So thank you, Mr. Keith. Did you want to respond?
Yeah,
sure. You have to.
Thank you for the latitude to speak again. There are some misconceptions regarding People's Kitchen and the Homeless Coalition. The Homeless Coalition and People's Kitchen are two separate entities, and it's actually the Homeless Coalition that was granted the money from.
There tends to be some overlap there. And, yeah, I know Dina, I noticed that Dina's out there in the audience. Did you want to say anything? I know you sit on one of the committees.
I can meet with Bill and explain the money situation.
Okay, great. Okay. Thank you. And we didn't agendize the item, so I don't want to take this any further than we have at this point. So moving on then to our public hearings, the Grover Beach Lodge and Conference Center development permit application number 1003. The applicant is Pacifica Companies, and our Community Development Director Buckingham and Public Works Director City Engineer Ray are going to be presenting tonight. There's Mr. Ray. Nice colors up there.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. So as you know, tonight we're reviewing the Grover Beach Lodge and Conference Center project. The applicant is Pacific Companies, and they are proposing a 150-room hotel, conference center, and restaurant. The site is approximately 13 acres and is located at the end of West Grand Avenue. Just for orientation purposes then on the site, here's Grand Avenue at the bottom. This is the existing Finn's Seafood Restaurant, the Golf Course Clubhouse, LeSage RV Park, the LeSage Mobile Home Park north of LeSage here, and just off of the screen here is Highway 1. Tonight's presentation, I'm really going to focus on more of the project description itself. There's a lot of background that has previously been discussed and provided in staff reports, and I'm going to skim over that tonight, but I'm available for any questions regarding that. The project location is unique because it's not only within the state park, it's within the city limits. And this has created a lengthy process, which has included the city and state entering into a joint powers agreement and the public selection process of Pacific Companies as the developer and operator of the hotel. It took several years to get through that process, and then we finally hired a consultant, prepared the EIR, and the first public hearing on the project was in February 2012 when the Planning Commission held a public hearing and recommended the council approve the project. And really, that project hasn't changed much today from what you're going to be seeing tonight. The following instant with our local coastal program, LCP. But in this case, we needed an LCP amendment to amend the LCP so that the project then could be consistent as proposed. So, and that LCP amendment requires Coastal Commission approval. So we had to wait till the Coastal Commission acted on the LCP amendment before it could come back to you. And as you recall, in April of this year, the Coastal Commission finally had that public hearing. They did approve the LCP amendment, but with revisions. Those revisions subsequently came back for the council's review in May. You approved those revisions, and in June of this year, we finally certified the LCP amendment or completed that process. So as a result of those revisions made by the Coastal Commission, there were two minor changes to the project, which I'm going to go through tonight. The bottom line is tonight the applicant has revised the plans to be consistent with that LCP, and the final project approval is before you tonight, and this would conclude the entitlement process for the project. So in talking about the project, again, let me orientate you then. Here again at the bottom is West Grand. Here is LeSage. Highway 1 is over here. In this drawing here is Finn's Seafood Restaurant here, the clubhouse here, the existing tent. So the project consists of the 150-room lodge, conference center, and restaurant, and it's about 121,000 square feet in total within four buildings. Those four buildings are the main building 1 here, building 2 right here, which sits in the existing golf course parking lot, building 3 located here, and building 4, the conference center, here. The primary access to the site will be on Grand Avenue, with the main entrance here to the lodge and kind of the drop-off location here. There will still be secondary access off of LeSage, and I think, again, primarily for the golf course patrons, they would continue to use LeSage. So in looking at building 1 right here, it's about 63,000 square feet, 3 stories, maximum height of 40 feet. The main entry is located on the east side of the building here. The restaurant is on the west side, and this is an outdoor pool. This building would include the lobby, check-in, gift shop, and 4 conference rooms. But a lot of different accent materials as well. The building will meet LEED silver status by incorporating green building materials, utilizing energy efficient systems, and incorporating energy and water savings features throughout the project. LEED, by the way, stands for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. Here are the north and south elevations. So moving on to buildings 2 and 3. Building 2, again, located up here in the northwest project site. It is about 19,000 square feet. It is 2 stories, a maximum height of 24 feet, and has 31 rooms. Building 3, located here adjacent to Grand Avenue, is about 29,000 square feet, 3 stories, with a maximum height of 40 feet, and contains 47 rooms. As I mentioned, this was one of the two revisions required or necessitated by the approval of the Coastal Commission's LCP amendment. They required Building 2 be reduced from 3 stories to 2 stories. So that is what is before you tonight, a 2-story building here. That resulted in about a loss of 8 rooms. And Building 3 was then expanded slightly to the north here, to add back in those 8 rooms. So there was no net loss in the number of rooms for the project. It remains at 150. Building 3 elevations, east and west. Again, the 3-story building. And then somewhere I don't have building 2 to show you. All right, then we'll go to the conference center, the 4th building here, located adjacent to Meadow Creek. It's about 11,130 square feet. It's a 1-story building with a roof at about 28 feet in maximum. The conference center within that 11,000 square feet contains about 5,500 square feet of ballroom area, and it also includes a pre-function area, setup area outside of the main ballroom. It has its own restroom facilities, kitchen prep, and storage, all within that conference center building. And there are the elevations, east and west, for the conference center. If you recall, when the architect has been here to speak, most of what you see out there today is the public amenities. You would have public walkways added throughout the site. So all of these things represent pathways. There was a pathway added along the west side of the building, so it would have uninterrupted views of the dunes. This will tie in, of course, to our existing boardwalk. The other thing that you will have as part of this project is the lodge, not only the materials, but the decorative concrete. That will all be integrated to match the state park amenities, so you have a common design theme throughout the project. The new project would add considerably more landscaping than you have out there today. It would be primarily sand dunes that would actually be integrated into the site. Part of their concept, again, was to pull that dunes into the site to kind of break up the hard edge we have today with a wall and then just paving. And in this picture here, these kind of light things represent sand dunes surrounding the buildings here and over here. The dark areas represent retention basins. They're very shallow. They'll be planted with native riparian plants, and would emulate more of a slack pond or something that you'd be seeing behind a dune in nature. The golf course itself remains unchanged. The pro shop here, there are two things that are relocated. One is the putting green is located just south of the golf course pro shop. And then the existing parking that's located over here to the west is now relocated here to the east. Along Meadow Creek, there would be a 50-foot riparian corridor that would be really expanded and enhanced from what it is today. And there would also be a trail here from Grand Avenue that will run along adjacent to the creek and connect up to the conference center and the other internal trails within the site. And the existing RV dump station that is located generally in this area, that would be removed, and the existing RV dump station located at the North Beach campground would be expanded to accommodate any lost capacity here. On to parking. The lodge parking in this general area here is 209 spaces approximately. That does exceed the zoning code requirement of 158 parking spaces. The parking lot for the lodge would also include some diagonal pull-through space. The north here fins where the public area was expanded. Those spaces are relocated down here to the southeast corner. In general, that landscape buffer you see there kind of separates the private parking from the lodge and the state park and the public parking. The other revision to note is, of course, there was equestrian parking proposed on the south side of Grand. That has been eliminated as part of the Coastal Commission action, and that's been relocated on site to this area here. this represents about 10,000 square feet. This was the location that was identified in the EIR as the environmentally superior alternative outside of the dune area to the south. A couple things that, so I'm talking about the equestrian parking area here. So in order to create a safe passage then from the equestrian parking area here, which would be an all-weather surface, there would be a couple of parking spaces here that are eliminated now. You would access to the trail here along the creek. The trail would come down to Grand Avenue. As you know, as part of Grand Avenue Phase 3 improvement project, there'll be a new decorative crossing here on Grand Avenue. And then utilizing the existing shoulder, we would be adding an 8-foot-wide trail, basically the sand area along the side of the road currently. But that would allow then equestrians to come west on Grand Avenue and access the Grand Dune Trail. And that area would have some kind of trail fencing to separate it from the travel lanes and the shoulder of the road. Just one other thing to note, the way this plan is drawn right now, there are some landscape planters or raised curbs here. We did add a condition of approval that would do away with some, if not all, of this to try to maximize the parking area here for equestrians or oversized vehicles. I'm trying to think if there's any other site features that are important to point out, but I think I'll just wait for questions. We'll approve the project again. Their recommendation from over a year ago is, in essence, the same project that you see before you tonight. And that concludes my presentation. City staff and state park representatives are available for questions.
Thank you. Was there anybody from state parks who wanted to comment as part of the presentation at this point? Okay, so bringing it back to council, and then after that we'll open it for public comment. Does the council have any questions? Looks like Mayor Pro Tem Bright has questions.
I have, yes, please, just a couple to start with. And I don't know, it might not even be our staff who would answer them, but first one is the state parks parking lot. Why is that asphalt? Do you know?
Actually, it's proposed as DG or an all-weather surface, gravel, I should say.
Because on the plans it says asphalt. But, okay, that's good to know.
They have, the applicant has somewhat vacillated on this. It's part of meeting the LEED design requirements. They're looking to minimize runoff. And
good.
So,
yes.
It's interesting. Right now, they do show, the only thing that they've showed, I know that they've intended to be all paved, is the golf course parking lot for practical reasons there. But the rest of the lodge and the state parking lot.
Well, maybe that was the one that I'm thinking of. It was up in the corner, though, I thought.
Yeah, that would be the
yes,
what you see
there.
In the dark
mm-hmm.
here.
Yeah.
That is proposed to be paved. Everything else at this point is likely to be some combination of paving and or gravel in order to meet those LEED requirements.
Okay. Thank you. Then, now can you point to me, can you, probably not on this plan, but where is the pool going to be? I know it's going to be in building one. Is it going to be?
It's on the ground floor.
Oh, it is on the ground floor.
Yeah.
Okay.
So would have restaurant seating here with some outdoor seating that will all have a view of the pool.
Okay.
Really, the pool is one of the only amenities other than the rooms themselves that would not be open to the public.
Yeah. People have asked me if there was going to be a pool, and I kept saying there was, and then I didn't see it on the plans. Now, where on earth is that pool? Okay. I think those are my only questions at this point. Maybe after these fellows get done, I may have another one or two.
And well beyond what you see today. So it will, where the area kind of becomes flat and is dirt right now, that entire area will end up being, as part of a habitat restoration plan, will end up being planted with riparian plants. So you'll see really the corridor itself will be expanded in reality 50 feet or approximately thereof. So that you'll have a larger riparian corridor. And again, that's a Coastal Commission requirement.
Are they going to clean it out at all?
Yes. I mean, part of the applicant's responsibility in this case is not only to clean what's there, remove invasive species, and as I'm saying, they'll actually plant more and expand it larger than what you see today.
Okay. also, there was some discussion with reference to the public parking versus the hotel parking. And in your report, there are mentioned that this has been discussed by state parks, the developer, and the city. I can foresee difficulties there. To what extent have they discussed that as a problem insofar as public parking into the hotel parking area? That sort of thing, yeah. Especially on some of the weekends when we have so many people. What sort of have they discussed the fact that those are going to create some problems, but they're willing, if the report says they're willing to take that into consideration and live with it?
Right. The conversations that I've been part of, and state parks may want to respond, but I think both Pacific and state parks recognize that they're going to have to work together, that this is a partnership. I think even today they have to work with Finns on heavy weekends and how you secure or reserve enough parking. I would add, though, that as part of that, there is the condition to produce a comprehensive sign program, because not only off-site and getting here and access to the different facilities, but once you get on-site, you're going to need parking that clearly is, labeling the or directing you to public parking versus private parking. So I think that will be helpful, and I think it will probably end up being one of those things that over time, as you come to the site, you'll be better educated on where you should park and where you shouldn't park.
But it has been discussed to the extent that, they all understand that could be a problem and they're willing to take care
Yes,
of it.
There has been definitely acknowledgement of that.
Okay. The other question I have is with reference to the equestrian area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand that we do have a potential alternative. And if we go forward with that alternative site, which is in
the Oceana Airport, it's about 0.8 of an acre, which is about the same size as we were looking at the south side of Grand. There are some issues that need to be worked out, but staff does remain optimistic and is going to continue to work towards that goal of providing that location as well for equestrian parking.
Okay. My point being that we do intend to develop that as an alternative facility, alternative site, I guess I should say, but we will still put in the parking area that you have described there for equestrian trailers, or were you referring to maybe mobile homes that might be renting a room in the hotel and could use that as a parking space?
Well, that area was specifically designated over here because that is private parking and would be for oversized vehicles of people staying at the lodge. You know, the area here, again, as we talked about eliminating some of this landscaping and making it more open for vehicles park, you know, it's not just equestrian parking. I mean, on the 4th of July, you're not likely to see equestrians out there. This will be used by oversized vehicles that are using the state park. So it's, you know, there is a multi-purpose aspect to it. It's not exclusively equestrian parking.
Okay. That's all. Thank you.
Thanks. You two down here?
No, go ahead.
Wait, I'll go next. Thanks, Bruce, for that presentation. Just a couple questions for you. By reconfiguring the equestrian parking in reconfiguring it in the parking lot,
yes,
we don't run the risk of approaching the 40% minimum requirement for landscaping, do we? I mean, I know that it says we're at 46 now, so I'm assuming that's not going to get us close to that threshold.
And we counted this as parking area and not open space area, so
okay.
It won't count against us.
Okay, great. Then my really only other question has to do with timing. So it in the staff report, we talk about the equestrian area, the existing RV dump station that needs to be relocated, and there's a number of permits and county processes and CEQA and coastal development applications. And how does that fit into Pacifica's time frame and the state's time frame for actually construction starting?
Well, I think the timeline estimated for Pacifica to start construction, there's a lengthy plan check process the state's involved. There's other amendments that need to be made to the RV dump station usage. So those things just need to be in place prior to the starting of construction. I think the answer is right now we don't see any reason why that would delay the construction of the project because there's ample time to take care of those other things. And there are just things that haven't been answered, like will the permanent parking spaces be constructed on day one and then the hotel, or will you create an interim area while you're under construction? So some logistics just haven't been addressed yet.
And I guess the only concern I have, which, as we all know, it's taken 30 years for us to get to this point. I don't want it to take another 5 years to get through the city of Pismo, through the county, through the Coastal Commission, through all of the other things that are outside of our control from that perspective. So but you've waylaid my fears for the moment.
Council member.
Sure. Hey, Bruce.
Marshall.
Just kind of tagging on to Councilmember Nicholson's question about the parking. So the area north of the horizontal land strip, that's all hotel parking.
In general.
In
yes.
general.
I mean, there is some spillover hotel parking that will be in this location south of my landscape area. There's actually parking up here and over here that are not included in the 52 parking spaces. So again, you're back to the need to have comprehensive signage program to identify public parking versus private parking.
So then the other question would be, does the hotel hotel parking, would that include the conference center, or is the conference center the other parking?
The 209 parking spaces proposed represent parking for both the hotel and the conference center.
So visitors to the conference center can use the hotel parking spaces?
Correct.
And that'll be signed as such?
Correct.
Okay. And then who's maintaining, I forgot, I had a senior moment here. The public street, LaSage. Not Grand Avenue, but
LaSage.
Thank you. Are we going to be maintaining that parking lot? We the city, or are we going to give it to them? Or
well, these are issues of the concession contract.
Okay.
And remember that there's two concession contracts. There's one existing one with Finn Seafood and the golf course, and what they maintain today. That will probably need to be amended to understand what facilities they would maintain. Again, then versus the lodge that will obviously be maintaining their buildings and their parking lot.
Yeah. And that was about the only questions I had, other than, you know, I kind of have some issues with the public portion of the parking lot, just the circulation and the vehicles. But those are turning movement things that I'm sure city staff will work out when the plans come in. Other than that, it's a nice plan. It's a nice setup. I like it. First time I've actually had an opportunity to really look at the plan set, and it's appealing.
That's encouraging.
Yeah, it's nice.
Councilmember Lee.
A lot of time's gone into it, I can tell.
Yeah. So, and actually, I'm going to piggyback on what Councilmember Marshall said. Coming into Grand Avenue for a second. Obviously, we have our phase three improvements down there, and there was some discussion when that initial layout was brought forward, and we were talking about design contracts and so forth, and there was discussion about eliminating the crosswalk, the mid-block crosswalk, and keeping it at the main entrance. You mentioned tonight that was going to be maintained in there, is to have that equestrian crossing at the westerly driveway. Mm-hmm. So how is that? How are the two projects commingling?
So the... this location on the plan is incorrect. We have a condition of approval. The two crossings will be here aligned with the intersection to the west of the main entrance. And then the other crossing here is just immediately east of this crossing or this driveway as well. So I believe that was consistent with the council direction. And we did meet and discuss this with State Parks as well.
Any other questions from the council? I had a couple of questions. One is that there have been several things that have been mentioned that there may be some changes to. And how does that get into the record? How do we enforce that if the drawings aren't showing it?
That's via conditions of approval. So when you go to the public works condition, it specifically says where those crossings shall occur.
Okay.
So... a condition of approval will always clarify or rectify any inconsistency with the plan.
Okay, great. And yes.
And additionally, a number of these things will be addressed with the final amendments, both to the concession contract and potentially the JA agreement.
Thank you. And then another question is more of a technical question.
Yes, and that's why I think it's probably truly more of a small gravel than it is a decomposed granite.
Okay. So what's the purpose of the soil amendments?
There's a reference to soil amendments having to do with the basins. And if that's the issue you're raising, I'll have Greg Ray address that.
I'm curious about
that. It has to do
that,
with, I'll let him address it.
Yeah, thank you.
Good evening, Council. One of the requirements on site will be to not only retain water, and you'll hear a little more about this later in another presentation, but to also treat stormwater runoff on site. And the method of doing that is what would be called a biofiltration basin. In a biofiltration basin, the soils at the bottom of the basin and the plant colonies at the bottom of the basin are custom selected to provide an opportunity for certain organisms to grow and thrive in order to treat water in that area at the bottom of the basin. So those soil amendments are directly related to water treatment.
That makes me happy. Okay, thank you. I feel more comfortable with that now. And then I wanted to go back to Mayor Pro Tem Bright's question about why there's asphalt in the golf course parking lot. And you'd said, implied or mentioned that that's required, and why is that?
No, my understanding was just from a practical standpoint, mm-hmm. that you have golfers, you've got shoes, you have things that would not be ideal to be walking through gravel. And that so my understanding is it's only just a practical reason because of the golf course usage that this would be paved, completely paved.
Hmm. Maybe I can kind of put my own two cents into that as well. Is pesticides coming off the golf course get onto the shoes, get onto the pavement, they'll treat it as the runoff goes in into the basins. They'll treat it probably in a couple different spots where it goes into the basin. It'd be captured by a fossil filter or something like that, and then that gets into the bioretention or infiltration basin and does a double treatment.
So, okay,
I don't know
so
if
now
I put my foot in my mouth there, but that may be.
So now alarm bells are ringing because we've got pesticides and monarch butterflies, and those two are not compatible. One of the things that arose when I was speaking with some folks who do the riding out in the dunes was they said, well, we can't go to your restaurants in Grover Beach because there's nowhere to park our rigs. And I said, well, what do you mean the fire department can get in? And what are you talking about? Can't you get into that big parking lot we have back behind, back next to the train station? And they said, no. And I did speak with a firefighter about it who also said, you know what? We come in there in an emergency and we figure out how to do it. If these guys are driving these 48-foot rigs all the time, they probably can't get in there and out very easily, and they're not going to consistently make that choice. So I just wanted to suggest that we want to look really carefully at how we're configuring the horse trailer area and make sure that it is convenient for the people with the big RVs.
And the Pacifica's architect was aware of that, and they claim that what is shown on here does meet those radius radii. Maybe that's not the best example, but if you look up here, you see something that's a little more curved off. But we have added a condition of approval, and that all the final construction plans are going to have to plot these truck turning radii to make sure that they can accommodate oversized vehicles.
Good. That also makes me feel better. Thank you. That so far, it sounds like everything's been really well thought out. And thank you for all your hard work, Bruce. I know you've knocked yourself out for a few years, so thank you for that, and Greg, too. So I'm going to open this for public comment now. So 3 minutes again, if anyone wants to come forward from the public.
Good evening. Bruce, the concessionaire with the state of California, having Finns and Pismo Beach Golf Course. This particular, I am an expert in these type of projects. My last project was a $100 million project with the National Park Service at Mount Rushmore. So I'm very familiar with doing these projects correctly. I used to do this for a living for 20 years. The only comment, there's a couple comments I would have, but the only comment I would have is that if you're concerned in the parking lot, there should be a huge concern. We are not, there is not currently 169 parking spaces. There's 469 parking spaces. If you read the Joint Powers Agreement, it inadvertently did not include the dirt parking lot as parking. If you put those parking spaces down in a correct manner, the only thing I say is please try to figure out the parking situation. You will kill the local businesses because it thrives on people coming in and out, parking, coming in for an hour or two. You will be known as the people who created the biggest train wreck in parking history in this area. You will be known for that. And I don't say that in any type of manner except for information. But there is an elimination of 300 parking spaces. Just because a dirt lot doesn't have stripes on it doesn't mean people don't park in it. This last weekend, it was overflowed into that parking area. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your comments. Anybody else want to come forward? Oh, sorry, Sharon, yes.
Are we on? So we'll take all your questions, and then we'll address them at the end.
I too have a concern with the parking, but mine has to do with, well, several. Where are the employees to park? And how many are we talking on average? And if you have a major event, how many employees would you have? And where would they park? And then piggybacking on that regarding density, and I'm talking about human impact now, if you have a full complement of employees for a major event, and who's going to do that? And how will that be done? Being on a walker for most of the time, I was a little concerned with disabled parking, where it might be, and how it would be access to the paths. Would golf carts be available at the lodge so that they're not having to walk at all? Let's see, the floodplain we asked. Oh, will there be some sort of an area set aside for, it wouldn't necessarily be a loading dock, but for delivery of supplies and food and that kind of thing? I become very annoyed when I go to a public parking area and there sits several vehicles and I can't get through because they're making deliveries and they even have docks to go to, but don't do it. Is there an estimate for how much water will be consumed? And we're okay with that? The thing that concerned me, I have all kinds of questions about building materials, which I will not ask. But the thing that struck me about the modern architecture that as a JPA was agreed to is there's no softness in it at all. No curves. Nothing to reflect the softness of the dunes themselves. So you have just all these very hard-edged, it's easier to draw with a ruler. Look to me. The other thing is the frames around the windows, I don't know what those are. I can't remember what they're called, but anyway. Are they going to be aluminum? And has anybody determined what native plants and trees there are? And if true natives to this area are not found, then what happens to the JPA agreement as to, you know, that being mandated? Do we have to start all over again? That, those are a few of my questions, and I know I must have gone over my 3 minutes.
Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who has questions? No. Okay. I'm going to bring it back to the council. And one of the things I would like to do is and had thought of it before we heard from Bruce, and was on the parking. I think that I'd like to ask the council if we could agendize a conversation about parking at a later date. I don't know that we want to get in that tonight, but there are a whole lot of issues about parking, about how do we it's been something that's been on our list of things to do for quite a while. And actually, I wanted to check in with the city manager because I'd asked about that earlier, but is that on our list of priorities?
Yes. If you'll take a look at it, it was primarily referenced, I'll note, in the community development director can correct me if I'm wrong, but it was primarily aimed at curing some of the parking issues in the downtown area. That is under the community development goals and objectives. If you remember, we prioritized, and your first priority was signage, mm-hmm. and that was what we were going to try and get to this year, followed by parking if time would permit during the fiscal year.
Thank you. I'm almost thinking that the signage is something that's going to be worked out as part of this project, and I think in terms of bringing the beach in and taking the city out to the beach, that we'll want to have consistency, and it's different issues on signage, but certainly in terms of design, it might be something we want to leave until we're further along on this. I think there are other issues on signage that we need to address.
And if so, that's a separate issue which should be discussed later and agendized, if that is the wish of the council. With regard to any issues related specifically to the project, this is the time to ask the questions and get explanations and deal with them today.
Okay. All right. Well, let's leave that. We can leave the general thing for another time. I'll come back to it. I don't want to take the focus off of here. So the next question about parking then would be, in response to what we're hearing, is we are adding parking places at the train station at some point. Is that correct?
Yes, the train station expansion adds approximately 40 parking spaces, if I recall correctly.
Okay. All right. So we can talk a little bit more about that. The other, there are a few things that Sharon asked that I think we can.
Before we leave that, do you mind if I just ask a question? I'd like to hear how either staff or State Parks would respond to the question that we're losing almost 400 spaces. And so, then, I mean, just a general.
Right.
The question was asked, how is the project responding to that?
And then isn't there part of that property owned by somebody else?
No, it's all State Park properties.
Wasn't there going to be
the other side of the creek belongs to someone else?
Yeah.
But
so
everything west of
everything
the creek.
West is what we're talking about, right? So that's what we're talking about. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Madam Mayor, I could, at least in terms of trying to answer the question, the goal all along was to retain, in terms of at least number, the number of paved parking that is currently available out on site. That has been something that we've been following with the project since day one. There is nothing that says that certainly during holiday weekends it does get complicated, and The concessionaire is right. The dirt lot does currently get filled up. I do think, though, that in general, you've got just this site to deal with, and you'd end up, if you were to try and provide additional parking, you'd have to begin moving things around, and that could complicate other elements that you're trying to achieve in terms of conference room square footage, buildings, number of rooms, etc.
And that's why I was going further afield in asking if we could talk about parking, because we're not, there may be other locations where we can take some overflow parking, but I think it's something we need to plan for. So,
Parking that you're replacing.
Okay.
There was, as far as the JA is concerned, we never had identified any number associated with the dirt lot. So the amount of public parking and paved spaces that are now there are being incorporated into the existing project, just relocated.
Okay. And both the Coastal Commission and the JA have gone to extreme lengths to ensure that, A, no parking spaces are lost, and, B, that they're arranged in such a manner that is accessible to the public.
Right.
And so that's, we've had state approval, we've had Coastal Commission approval, and it certainly meets the requirements of the code.
Okay. And that's, I guess that's the biggest direction for me, is if it meets the requirements of our code and the requirements of our partners in all of this, then I think I'm comfortable with that. But it is represented that we're losing lots of spaces. So that was the first time I had heard that discussion.
Well, we're losing all of the overflow parking that was in the dirt lot.
Yeah, right.
The dirt lot.
And the dirt lot that I think the gentleman was referring to was the original project site. That was where the hotel was going to go. It wasn't a parking space as far as or parking lot as far as the project was concerned.
Okay.
Well, my concern with all of that is whether it was formal or informal, the fact is it's there and it's used. So what are we going to do about it? And that may not be a conversation for this evening, because if we're looking just specifically at this project, I'm inclined to agree that there's not a lot more we can do. But I think there is an issue.
I think we're looking at this project as it's been presented to the council. I have a problem looking at the field as a parking lot, having a comment that we're losing 300 parking spaces. We're not losing 300 parking spaces. Yes, there are occasions where people park out in that lot. There are people that camp there, too. Are we going to eliminate the camping? Are we going to worry about that? Are we going to shoot this project down because some campers can't park in that parking lot overnight sometimes? I think we're getting way off track on this. We've got a project here. It meets the requirements of the zoning code. It meets all the requirements that have to be met. We're starting to do.
Well, I really think that it's definitely there will be parking problems. We know that. But we still need to be aware of them. I don't think we want to bury our head in the sand and pretend that that's not going to happen. So I don't think that it's something where we would need to put a kibosh on this project, but I do think it's a discussion that we need to have. And it's a discussion that I think we need to follow through on later as well, because we have been talking about possible other parking areas and so on, so that we can talk about alleviating those problems later on, because they will be there, and we know that.
So. Fine.
And I don't hear anybody saying put the kibosh on the project.
Yeah.
No. I'm not hearing that.
Oh, wait a minute.
Let's be clear.
Yes, not at all.
Actually, just one quick question for staff. In the EIR, how did it deal with the overflow parking, or did it, or was it silent?
Good comment.
Parking evaluation is no longer a requirement for CEQA evaluation.
Oh. So it meets our standards, so be it.
Okay. Wow.
So I'm going to come back to the question about parking, and I'd like to know if the council would feels that it's something that we should agendize for a later date parking in terms of overflow parking for the hotel?
No. No. I think we have the project here, and this is what we need to look at. The overflow parking for the hotel is just going to be what it is if we approve this project. And you just need to realize
I'm not
that.
Making it a condition of approving the project. Mm-hmm. I'm just asking, can we have that conversation later?
Well, I think
later?
We should do it for the whole town, like I think mm-hmm. I heard staff say. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the issue. Not necessarily this place, right. but other. I mean, they can go park on the beach. I think the beach is open 24 hours, isn't it?
$5, but that's not too much for
it's
parking.
Cheap parking.
It's cheap parking.
I thought about that myself. You can park on the beach pretty much anywhere you like.
No, I just assume go ahead with this project. And.
Oh, I'm not suggesting yeah. we not do the project.
No, I understand yeah. what you're saying, but mm-hmm. that's a separate issue.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking unless if it's something we could agendize later.
Unless we can, on the south side of Grand, rip up all the dunes and put more parking there. But I don't think that's going to happen.
Something about paradise and paving?
Yeah, something okay. about equipment, yeah.
All right, so there were some other issues that were raised, that, and I want to get back to some of those questions. Some of them I know that I can answer. In terms of who monitors ingress and egress, that in terms of the parking, that was addressed in the staff report, and that is state parks, and they recognize that there are weekends where there are issues. So I'm comfortable with that unless anybody else. Okay.
It will inherently have as low of water consumption as possible.
Okay, great. And aquifer recharge with the basins and the pervious surfaces.
Correct.
Okay. So I think we've got that one covered. And in terms of native plants and trees, it's not something that you can see from these teeny tiny plants, but they are actually listed on the architectural mm-hmm. drawings.
Yes, and the Coastal Commission added a policy in our LCP that requires only native dune plant species be provided. So, and there are many different types, and we'll be working with state parks as well, who are experts in dune planting as well.
And this is something I've been requesting for 9 years now. So, I am comfortable that it's been addressed. And I will not let it go. So I think we're covered on that one. Whether I'm mayor or not, I won't let it go. And the other questions I'm not as clear on, so I'm wondering if maybe staff can help us with this. The floodplain and that perhaps the floodplain is infringing on some of the development?
I think I can answer this for Greg. I mean, you have some areas right now where the 100-year floodplain actually encroaches in a portion of the parking lot here.
And so that's from the creek, not from the ocean.
Correct, mm-hmm. correct. Okay. And there is a process. There's a condition of approval. They have to go through a letter of map revision process through the state in order to modify that floodplain. So there is a route in order to do that and not impact downstream properties.
Have we ever had flooding from that creek in anybody's living memory? Oh, yes. Okay. Thank you. All right. Okay. And where employees park and how many and in a major event, those are things I think we probably need to address later. Or do we have any response on that?
You know, I mean, in ultimately Pacifica is the concessionaire of the hotel and its parking spaces. It's going to want to provide parking places for its patrons. And who's to say? They may need to look at off-site employee parking in the future. I mean, there are other options to try to reduce their demand on parking for employees. As a side note, I know that a lot of the hotel industry doesn't necessarily use cars, and they're using transit. So that may have less of a burden on the parking as well.
And zoning standards include both employees.
Having a public amenity is having as many people enjoy it as possible.
And it is a 13-acre site, so there's a lot of acreage there.
Correct. And, of course, that doesn't include the beach and the trails and everything else that are within the state park.
Okay. Golf carts, that's probably a very good suggestion for the hotel, not ours.
Yeah, I've casually mentioned that to mm-hmm. them as well. Okay. You know, we've mentioned valet parking. I mean, again, there are other options for people to get around and to park on the site.
Have they reached the stage where they're working on the disabled parking?
You know, it's conceptually shown on here. If you looked closely, these are all handicapped spaces here adjacent to the entry of the conference center and the lodge itself. There's a couple of ADA parking spaces. down here. Again, the building, the California Building Code pretty much dictates how many, and usually because of the location, the travel path, they're going to be close to entrances and have to meet grades. So it's definitely a construction plan detail, but the project, suffice it to say, is going to meet all ADA codes.
Okay. I've seen a lot of times on the ADA, and I became very sensitive to it when I had a broken ankle for 3 years, where a lot of times they'll put it fairly close to the entrance, but it's really not right there. And for many people who have a handicap, another 5-10 steps is traumatic, and either because they have breathing or mobility difficulties. And so I would like us to look very carefully at that and truly get as close to entrances as possible.
And at least that's conceptually shown. Mm-hmm. I think the architect mm-hmm. did do a good job on that.
Okay. All right. And loading dock and deliveries?
The hotel has its own separate area here that's walled off, coming right off the pavement here. This number 21 is the loading and unloading zone for the hotel.
Any comments on building materials and softness or curves in the architecture? And aluminum windows?
Well, I have a very beautiful material sample board in my office that I forgot to bring. Most of the materials really are earth tones. There are a lot of everything from wood timbers to a lot of recycled plastic materials to look like wood. Yeah, there are some of the storefronts, if you will, or winter fronts are actually aluminum, but they've selected colors that, again, are very natural-looking. Grays, browns, tans are predominantly the entire
building.
It was specifically chosen by the JA because they felt it would be different than the Spanish Mission style and things that we see up and down the coast. I can't speak for the architect, but he would tell you that these angles emulate dunes and that they took that into consideration. So it is a personal preference.
Would it be possible for you to bring us that board, since this is our final conversation, and we've got members from the public here? Thank you.
My assistant,
thank
Greg,
you.
Will Your be assistant. Providing it briefly.
Okay.
Lovely
thank
assistant.
You.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've gone through the public questions, and I'm wondering if the council has any further questions or comments.
Just want to expand on the loading. So you showed it for the hotel. Do I see one also for the conference center? And then finally, what happens with fins?
Yes, the conference center does have a loading area here as well, specifically with the thought that things could be catered from the restaurant in the hotel, but you might also have an off-site delivery, so that is specifically a loading area there. I can't address the loading area for fins. There is an area right here that's specifically designated for beach drop-off that doesn't have any parking spaces that really impede that area there, but I couldn't tell you about the frequency and the timing of the delivery for fins.
Is it an issue for fins?
Oh, yeah. No parking is an issue.
Yeah. Aside from the number of spaces, the loading? I'm sorry.
Loading. We have 18 million.
Do you want to come up and talk to us so that you're on the record? Thanks.
Glenn, you asked a question, said the first time you heard about parking. I've been speaking about this since day one.
Sure, I believe that.
Okay. And talking about the parking, there is an issue. I mean, we get 18-wheelers in there 2-3 times a week. I don't know how they're going to get in and out.
They're not.
And the parking is a real issue. And they do just, and I appreciate you bearing with this, it's not, the overflow parking is not used just on an occasional basis. It's used almost every weekend. Okay, this is not a small problem. Mm-hmm. It's a huge problem. You'll be known as a place where the locals won't be able to go to park anymore. Okay, it's not a small problem. And I hope this issue gets resolved. But it will be a huge problem with, unless you do something a little bit different than that, bring an 18-wheeler in. Dina mentioned something. The reason why there is asphalt in the parking lot of the golf course is because people go in and unload and load.
Any other comments from council? Okay. I did want to, one of the things that was raised in our last joint authority meeting was What's the economy look like in terms of hotels and vacancy and room prices? And I was really happy to see the Economic Vitality Corporation in their Central Coast Economic Forecast to hear what they had to say. And I'm not going to go through all of it, but I did make copies of some of the excerpts from it, and you'll see these. I did give them to staff and to the council members, but also there should be some back on the table there. So if any of the public want to take a copy, it's there. And as far as tourism is concerned, something we all know anyway, but it is one of our leading industries, and it is growing very well, too. So that's, oh, thank you. We're getting the board up, which is very helpful, so that folks can take a look at it. Thank you. So just to go over some of those key strengths, we are, the county of San Luis Obispo is actually, in their words, surging ahead of Central Coast neighbors and the rest of California with the strong tourism sector and an agricultural sector and also the wine sector that are working together, and we all benefit from that. The spending by tourists has been outpacing the state overall, and San Luis Obispo County is up 8% over last year, and that's a faster rate of growth than in California overall. Of course, my question is, well, we're up all of that, but what about where were we? Where are we with relationship to where we were? And that, I don't believe, was addressed, but what was addressed is that in addition to more spending from local residents and tourists, and this is on page 29, we have 76% hotel occupancy, and the national average is 62%. So we're doing really well on that. Also, tourism in San Luis Obispo County is expected to remain robust through this year and next year, and actually expected to offset some of the losses that we have when our two power plants are built. So it will. We know it's going to generate a lot of jobs, but it will also generate income for the communities. Civic income. Restaurants and hotels are up 9.2% in our county, 7% in all of California in 2013. And we are considered one of California's economically fastest growing regions. And we're 15% of all jobs with leisure and hospitality. And that should continue. So, oh, I know what it was. Pismo Beach. Pismo Beach is the number one in California. I mean, the number one in the county, and possibly in California, actually, because we're way out ahead of the rest of the state. Our hotel occupancy is much higher in Pismo than anywhere else, and it's also the rates are much higher. So our occupancy is going up, and the rates are going up. So the average rate per night in Pismo went up almost 7%. It's just over $157 a night. And in Pismo, the rate is 74.5% is their occupancy rate. So I'm thinking that things are looking very good for us, and this is a good time for us to be getting a hotel up and running. And I'm not worried about that at this point. It's looking good. So I believe that will continue. Was there anything else before we look for a motion?
Oh, yeah I've got more things.
All righty. Yeah. Well, you've got the floor.
I've got the floor. Okay. Well, I was looking at a couple of the conditions, and I think I need to go back to the parking. And I understand that that area is used in an overflow, but I think if we're meeting the parking requirements, that's about as good as I'm comfortable with that. We can't plan for weekends. I mean, we plan for regular work days when we design something. And, you know, the weekends, being local, I'll just have to ride my bike or walk. That's just because I'm not going to deal with the parking out of that. So I'm okay with that. The 18-wheeler for the loading zone for the Finns property, I don't see the necessity for having an 18-wheeler service. I mean, I look at 18-wheelers, and they serve Costco and Walmarts, and I think smaller trucks could do the delivery here. It's State Parks property. If this is how they want to pursue this, and this is, I suspect, it's up to them. But it still begs the question of having some sort of loading area, because you won't have that with the Pro Shop or the Finn's restaurant. Instead, depending on deliveries, which I assume would be more in the morning at probably wouldn't impact parking, but I don't know. Might be something they want to consider when you do your plan check. So those are just comments. I'm not looking for any sort of – those are just my thoughts. And that's all they are is thoughts. Recommend we put it. And also, because we do have the decomposed gravel or granite on the public parking lots, I think we need to provide some sort of de-tracking device so that they don't track the gravel onto the sidewalks on Grand Avenue, especially, and into the street where it becomes a maintenance issue for us. So maybe paving the first 30 or 40 feet just to remove the gravel, then they'd have to maintain it somehow to keep the gravel off. That would be. I'd recommend that as a condition. Then looking at PW5, we talk about two westbound 13-foot travel lanes and one eastbound 12-foot with 4-foot wide shoulders. When we were looking at the Grand Avenue plan, I think we were talking about bike lanes either side. I don't know how if this conflicts with what we were doing there or.
Well, there was a subsequent meeting that staff had with State Parks.
Okay.
And through that discussion and, of course, only some of the Grand Avenue right-of-way is city right-of-way. At a certain point, Grand Avenue right-of-way becomes all State Parks.
About what point is that? The main driveway?
It's
or?
About the main driveway today, I believe.
Okay.
So the answer to the question was the I think the preference of State Parks was that we do away with the bike lanes on Grand Avenue and stick with a multi-purpose path on the north side.
Okay. Let's see. And then PW number 14, the only thing I would add into that condition is irrigation. So they have to maintain the landscaping and irrigation just so we don't get stuck with the cost or somebody doesn't shut it off or assuming it needs irrigation, maybe it doesn't. I don't know what sort of plants we're proposing. And I think those are predominantly my questions. The rest of it looks pretty fine to me. Did I go too fast? Okay, good.
You're on it. Okay, Mr. Lee, can you rattle a few off? Nope, you're done? Okay. Anybody else down here? In which case, we're ready for a motion.
Oh, actually, one last one.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Bruce, you had mentioned there was a condition about checking turning radiuses in the parking lot for oversized vehicles. Could you point that out? I don't remember seeing that.
I am still concerned about the parking, and I'm wanting to think through this timeline. Mm-hmm. We're looking at another year before we could start construction, and probably another year for construction. So that gives us 2 years. Within the next two-year time frame, we will get to the parking conversation. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. All righty. Then I'm comfortable.
We need
you. Yeah.
Thanks. Okay. I will move that we approve the that we adopt the resolution approving the coastal development permit and site and architectural plans. And if there are those additions to the conditions, have you noted those, Bruce?
I'm sorry.
The conditions that were talked about, have you taken that?
Yeah, so we're trying to figure out. So PW14 would be amended to add irrigation as far as maintenance. There would be a new condition that we'll add regarding de-tracking devices to remove gravel from entering the public street.
Sure. Best management.
I'm going to defer to my public works director.
I see our city attorney is looking quite alarmed. Did you want to say something?
Good.
No? Okay. All right.
What do you call that?
Just an additional paved area to minimize tracking of gravel onto public surfaces.
I think a reasonable. A reasonable condition of approval would be that the project applicant has to evaluate a tracking of gravel and or decomposed granite from the site and provide suitable project details to
suitable mitigation.
Yeah, suitable mitigation.
Perfect.
To limit
I like
the tracking.
That.
And my motion stands with those conditions.
And then CDD 6 to be amended to ensure that 160 spaces remain available at all times.
If the...
Yeah, I support all of those. Okay. Everybody else?
And we'll look at construction parking as part of the stormwater pollution prevention plan and other things.
I suspect.
Things,
so. Yeah.
Okay, the all motion right. is finished.
Do we have a second?
Nope, good.
I'll second that.
So we have a motion by Councilmember Nichols and a second by Mayor Pro Tem Bright. Could we have the roll call, please?
Yes.
Yes.
Building Regulations, Chapter 4, Grading, Development Permit Application 13-16, and the applicant is the City of Grover Beach, and this will be Public Works Director and City Engineer Ray.
Good evening, Mayor, Honorable Mayor and Council. Thank you for the introduction. The item before you tonight, as mentioned, is the first reading of an ordinance, which will, in fact, amend four municipal code sections, and also includes a resolution to enact some details of those four municipal code sections in the city standard plans and specifications under a new section titled Section 8. The slides behind you, you can follow along with my presentation. So there are essentially four municipal code sections proposed to be amended as this ordinance. The purpose of this ordinance and the amendments is to enact the stormwater requirements, which have been our new requirement for the general permit for the city. And the four sections that we are considering amending include a section on illegal discharge and illicit connections, a section on stormwater construction and post-construction requirements, which again include detailed requirements within the standard plans and specifications, an amendment to the grading and drainage sections, and a very minor amendment to the definitions. So why are we doing this? The Federal Clean Water Act extends national pollutant discharge elimination system requirements to stormwater and urban runoff discharges to and from the storm drain system. The city is required to enroll as a permittee under the NPDES statewide general permit, which I'll identify as the general permit from this point on. Under the provisions of the general permit, the city is required to implement appropriate procedures to regulate the entry of pollutants and non-stormwater discharges into the storm drain system, to implement mandatory site design measures to minimize the adverse effects of urbanization and development on watershed processes, and where possible, to maintain and or even restore receiving water beneficial uses. The first code amendment involves deleting Article 5, Chapter 6, Maintenance of Construction Sites, within the Municipal Code, replacing that with Article 5, Chapter 6, requirement to stop and clean up sewer discharges immediately, to remove illicit connections and clean up other discharges within 72 hours of notification, to prohibit illegal discharges, and to implement a system of progressive enforcement. Note that an illicit connection is any connection made to the storm drain system without approval, and that could lead to illegal discharges into the system. The general permit requirements for progressive enforcement also include us to impose fines for certain continued violations of these new requirements. So what is an illegal discharge? An illegal discharge is identified as anything that isn't stormwater entering into either receiving water or the city storm drain system, except for allowed non-stormwater discharges. And allowed non-stormwater discharges include waterline flushing, individual residential car washing, and I'd note that mobile car washing would be prohibited without a special containment and collection system, uncontaminated pumped groundwater, air conditioning condensation, discharge from footing drains, dechlorinated swimming pool discharges if free of other pollutants, incidental runoff from landscape areas. Note that that must be incidental. Talk more about that in a minute. and discharges or flow from firefighting activities. So as you can see, under the requirements of the new general permit for the city, it's pretty intrusive in terms of what can be put into the storm drain system. Also note that overwatering is not considered an incidental discharge. So if there is excess runoff from property due to irrigation, under the new requirements, you will be required to detect leaks and correct leaks, if it's caused by leaks, within 72 hours, and to remedy other situations within 10 days. And the remedies could include redesigning sprinkler systems, aiming sprinkler heads in the proper direction, or turning off irrigation during rain events. I want to mention, this is probably a good point to bring this up, that the new general permit, NPDES general permit, that the city is enrolled under is very specific about these requirements. Most of the language in here is taken directly from the permit. So this is not the standards which are now being consolidated within the development code. Highlights for the construction would include, construction portion of this would include that during construction, the new code requires all projects to implement minimum stormwater protection standards, all projects. And requirements would increase based on potential threat to water quality. The new code also includes adopting thresholds for new post-construction requirements. And projects meeting certain thresholds are required to mitigate for increased pollution, volume of runoff, and peak flow rates associated with that new development. And again, the requirements increase as the size of the project increases. Detailed requirements will be included in city standard and specifications, which will be the new section 8. And staff is developing standard plans and department handouts to simplify the process. It is somewhat complicated, and so we're trying to basically provide everything you need via a handout so that you can complete the process. The steps to implement the new construction requirements are, step 1, determine the threat to water quality. And if you can see this behind me, might be a little tough to read, but projects either have a negligible threat or a potential threat to water quality, the dividing line being the vertical line you see here. Projects that pose a negligible threat are considered low priority projects relative to these new requirements. And these would include projects that are not subject to the construction general permit. I'll discuss that a little more in a bit. Projects that drain to a regional detention basin, which includes a number of sites within the city. Projects where the contractor or developer has a history of compliance. So we'll be tracking compliance for individual contractors and developers. And projects, if they involve grading, where cuts and fills are less than 6 feet and slopes are flatter than 3:1. Projects that pose a potential threat to water quality would be considered a higher priority, and they would include projects that are not subject to the construction general permit but exceed the low priority project thresholds I mentioned earlier, the low project thresholds being on this side of the line here, just been developed. Note that the construction general permit is a permit issued by the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and the erosivity waiver I mentioned earlier is an opportunity for an applicant to not have to apply for that permit if they're constructing during a time of year when likelihood of erosion is pretty limited. So the second step under the construction, new construction requirements, are develop an appropriate plan. And to determine which plan is required, again, you look at the priority ranking of the projects. A low-priority project would be required to produce a water pollution control plan. A higher-priority project that is not disturbing greater than 1 acre would be required to produce a water quality control plan and an erosion and sediment control plan. And projects that disturb greater than 1 acre are subject to the construction general permit, and they are required to develop a stormwater pollution prevention plan, which includes an erosion and sediment control plan. And that gets submitted both to the city and to the Regional Water Board. The third step under the construction regulations is to implement the best management practices in accordance with the plan. Again, all projects must submit a plan. So that means an interior remodel or even a small addition has to submit a water pollution control plan. Now, again, staff is looking at this and trying to make this as simplified as possible. So we've actually developed as a draft to go into this new Section 8 in the city standard specifications, a very, very simple water pollution control plan for projects such as an interior remodel. You just check a couple boxes, sign on the dotted line, say we'll cover our trash, we won't wash out concrete in the street, and that kind of thing, and you're basically covered. So in terms of implementing best management practices, there's a list of those, we call them BMPs, and here's a list of things that would be required within that water pollution control plan. You know, and they're simple. Keep pollutants off of exposed surfaces, cover and maintain dumpsters, keep materials out of the rain, designate an area for auto parking or construction equipment parking, make sure portable toilets are in good working order, use as little water as possible, provide a water pollution control plan. You might see a checkbox for a handful of these. It would be considered typical of like an interior remodel or a small addition. And now on the post-construction side, again, remember that the new permit requirements include requirement to mitigate for the impacts of your project, essentially, in post-construction. So for post-construction, we're required to include detailed requirements in city standards and specifications, Section 8. We'll, again, develop standard plans and department handouts to simplify the process. And for post-construction requirements, thresholds are determined based on impervious surface area. So if a project creates new or replaces impervious surface area of less than 2,500 square feet, the project is considered exempt from post-construction requirements. And that's good news because really the majority of projects in the city are probably exempt from the post-construction requirements. But if you're not exempt, you move into a whole set of regulations here. So the project, if not exempt, must be designed and built to mitigate for increased pollution, increased volume of runoff, increased peak flow rates, and again, the size and type of project determines which requirements apply. Note that some city projects are exempt, and specifically maintenance is exempt from post-construction requirements. So the steps to implement the post-construction requirements are: step one, determine which regulation applies. Again, the project is exempt if it creates or replaces less than 2,500 square foot of impervious surfaces, or if it's maintenance, or if it's a bike path or sidewalk project constructed out of permeable materials. But if it doesn't fall under any of these exemptions, the project's considered regulated. And again, still under step one, if your project is a regulated single-family detached home, you go into the set of thresholds you see here, and that is just over 2,500 square feet of new or replaced impervious surface. You need to design site drainage to minimize runoff. If you exceed 15,000 square feet of new or replaced impervious surface, you have to have ongoing operation and maintenance of your post-construction requirements. And that includes entering into an agreement with the city. Again, still, step one, if you are a regulated project and you are not a single-family detached home, it just adds a new threshold here, and that is if you build or replace greater than 2,500 square feet of impervious surface, again, you design site drainage to minimize runoff. If you're greater than 5,000 square feet, you treat your runoff. If you're greater than 15,000 square feet, you retain the runoff volume. And if you're greater than 22,500 square feet, you manage peak flows. Now, this is likely to happen. And if, for a subdivision, for a large commercial project, you are likely to meet one of these project thresholds and, again, have to implement these post-construction requirements. Again, if you use anything other than natural site features to meet these requirements, you develop and implement an operations and maintenance plan and an agreement with the city. There are some special circumstances allowed in the permit, the NPDES permit, and we have included those in this new ordinance. If the project is located in what's called an urban sustainability area, then or if the project meets other certain requirements, you may be able to implement a different set of standards. But to define urban sustainability area, that's an area which is defined and identified by the city staff in particular, but has to be submitted to and approved by the Regional Water Board. So we have identified an area. It's pending approval with the Regional Water Board. The area we identified as urban sustainability area is basically most of West Grand Avenue, with a slight wrinkle in that we specifically identified project sites that would be, by zoning, would be allowed to develop 75% or more of the lot. So that would make sense. If you have a site where by zoning you're allowed to develop more than 75% of the lot, maybe a lot-to-lot building construction, for example, in the downtown area, implementing on-site treatment or on-site retention may be infeasible. Project also may have other site features that make compliance infeasible. We could run across a rock outcropping, for example. I mean, there are a few up on the areas up on the top of the hill near North 4th, where there's some. That was the basically completion of the second code amendment. The third amendment is an amendment to delete Article 8 of the Building Regulations, Chapter 4, Grading Regulations, and add, or basically move that with amendments into Section 5.50, Grading and Drainage, to the Municipal Code, Article 9, which is the Development Code under Chapter 5, Site Development Standards. Complex. The highlights of this new code include update the original code adopted in 1977. The code is pretty much outdated. Slightly modify thresholds for obtaining a grading permit, moving from the old standard of 50 cubic yards requires a grading permit to a standard that looks at the area and depth of grading instead of just the volume. Highlights of this new grading and drainage code include retention basin requirements previously only found in the standard plans and specifications, so we've actually moved them into the municipal code. And I'll note here that the city's retention volume requirements for flood reduction are actually greater than the volume required for stormwater post-construction. So we're somewhat unique in that regard, where other cities, where I was talking about post-construction requirements in the previous section, where other cities are objecting strongly to that requirement for on-site retention, ours is, our existing requirement actually exceeds those requirements. The grading code amendment adds operation and maintenance requirements for those retention basins on site for new construction on a vacant lot or in a lot where the primary structure is being removed, and new construction that results in an increase to impervious surface equal to or greater than 40%. That's a threshold commonly found throughout our existing code for other construction requirements within development code. The amended code includes references to the new stormwater regulations also. The Planning Commission, during our meeting where we presented the code amendments to them, recommended modifying our draft ordinance to replace clearing of vegetation with removal of vegetation, so that it was clear that simply trimming or brush trimming or weed eating would be allowed and wouldn't require a grading permit. And they And the grading ordinance will continue to reference vegetation removal for other grading and erosion standards where permit is not required. If you look in attachment 3 to your staff report, you could see these changes, those recommended by the Planning Commission and those further modified by staff are identified by strikeout, underline, and double strikeout within that attachment 3. The final code amendment, the simplest one of the night, is simply to add myself into the development code under Chapter 9 definitions. But to define public works director is either the public works director and his or her designee, so that sections of the code can be enacted by a designee of myself or my department. So the recommended action before you tonight, staff recommends the City Council introduce and conduct the first reading of the ordinance by title only, amending Grover Beach Municipal Code Article 9, which is the development code, Municipal Code Article 5, Sanitation and Health, Chapter 6, and the Municipal Code Article 8, Building Regulations, Chapter 4, Grading, to schedule a second reading and adoption at the next regular City Council meeting, and to adopt the resolution approving City Standards and Specifications, Section 8, Stormwater Construction and Post-Construction Management. Attachment 1 to your staff report is the draft ordinance, which amends the code sections identified and discussed previously. Attachment 2 is the resolution to adopt Section 8 to the City Standards and Specifications. And that does conclude my presentation. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
If I may add, Mayor, yes, Council members, assuming that this is moved forward by the Council, we will reformat the resolution to match the shape of the code, and basically so it is a seamless document with regard to the same formatting as the code and the zoning.
Thank you. Any questions from
Councilmember
Nichols?
First question I have. Do you have any idea how much time and money has been spent putting this plan or getting this plan where it's at right now?
Just the development of this set of ordinances, municipal code amendments, as well as the detailed specifications and handouts that we put together.
Provided this week, I noted that there is one payment to Tenera Environmental for contract assistance with stormwater work in the amount of $23,792. Again, I'm just trying to emphasize all of this is state mandated, correct?
Correct.
We have to do this, and the state doesn't reimburse us for any of this, or the time or the money.
That's correct.
And this one payment here of $23,000, that's just part of what we have had to pay a consultant for this program?
Yes.
And that's correct. And I think, you know, I didn't belabor the point, but as you can see, these requirements are fairly complex, which means that moving forward, there'll be a significant amount of staff training. The city staff itself in our own operations are subject to these new requirements. So we'll incur costs and expenses for training public works staff, development review staff, our own operations in managing these kinds of stormwater requirements, but as well these ongoing requirements for post-construction, you know, we'll be actually monitoring retention basins and other treatment facilities into the future without limit. So it's a big undertaking.
And I appreciate that. And back early on, you were talking about water runoff. And one of the things we have to look at is incidental. What is incidental? What is incidental to you and what is incidental to me? Probably two totally different things. So number one, who's going to define what is incidental? And once somebody comes up with a definition, how are we going to enforce that?
I think it's good that you brought that up. The new NPDES permit the city is enrolled under clearly defines exactly what is considered incidental. So we're required to basically regurgitate that language within our code letter per letter. So it does clearly define what is incidental, and it in fact says, for example, that runoff from your sprinklers from overwatering is not incidental. So theoretically, we have a requirement to become water cops.
Okay, that's really interesting, and I find it very interesting. And if they're going to water their front yard, there's no way that they can water it without water running off because of the slope. So is that incidental? Does it? When does it become a problem, and how do you enforce that? Are you going to make these people redo their landscape as far as enforcement is concerned? And we don't have the personnel in this city to enforce this stuff.
I think those are good points you bring up. You know, we would have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. I think we would operate on a complaint basis. So if someone filed a complaint and said, you know, this is a problem, we would react to that complaint and then make an appropriate determination at the time. I would agree that it's going to be a challenge for city staff to do that as it exists today. And I think certainly you would have to somewhat rely on staff to make a reasonable judgment in that regard.
Well, I applaud your efforts. I do, sincerely. And I know you've been working on this very hard for a long time. Other things have kind of sat by the side because of the amount of work that you've had to put into this. And I applaud you for that. And I just find this whole thing a little bit on a ridiculous side from standpoint of all of these mandates that are put on our city that we have to contend with, we have to pay for. It's just very frustrating to me to have to sit here and listen to that stuff. Sorry. Off the box.
And I think we'll jump on the box with you. We're all on that wagon.
Yeah, we are. I agree. May I?
Yeah, please.
Just a couple of questions. I want to say I really appreciate your endeavor to assist the public in getting through this process. So by putting together a handout and the checklist and so on, I think is just a fabulous thing. I appreciate that. So what about people who have a pool or a spa and they need to drain it? What do they do? And it's chlorinated water.
So the requirement has actually always been there to dechlorinate that water before it is drained. The first and most correct answer would be to drain that to the sewer system. I think beyond that, to reach a determination that the water is dechlorinated but also doesn't pose a threat to the receiving waters, second phase of the permitting process. So there are large cities that have actually been under this a version of this permit for a long time. Smaller cities, such as the city of Grover Beach and really the five cities around you, are all now under this requirement.
So they're all part of this phase two, or
yes.
Phasing two. Okay.
Yes, the most of the requirements that come directly from the NPDES permit, the cities are adopting in pretty much the same manner. And then the sort of unique requirements to this region, which are the construction and post-construction requirements, those were developed by a consortium of those very same cities within this region. So we're all adopting similar standards. So a home buyer, a contractor, a developer would expect to see very similar standards in every city.
Well, that's good to know. I mean, at least it'll be uniform or somewhat anyway, bad enough that... I think those are my questions at this point. Thank you.
Councilmember Lee.
Thanks. Thanks for that, Greg. Appreciate all that. And just have a couple, one specific question and two soapbox issues to follow along with Councilman Nichols. So the erosivity waiver, who determines the applicability of that? Is that the city who determines if the person complies with it, or is that the water board?
It's really the water board.
It is. Okay. So, and then my other question was, these changes, is this basically the minimum we can get by with to satisfy the water board? I mean, I realize our own standards are in some instances above and beyond what the water board's calling for. But this is basically what everyone is, the minimum threshold where everybody is right now, correct?
That's correct, with the exception of retention volume, which is for a different reason. It's for flood protection and not stormwater control, not stormwater treatment and peak control and that kind of thing. With the exception of that, it's my opinion that these are the minimum requirements.
Okay, gotcha. And then part of the fiscal impact discussion in the staff report was with regards to the stormwater utility fee and coming back with either a potential for a increase in that. Is that something that comes back with the fee calculations next year? So when as we kind of see how this plays out for the first 6 months?
We will need to do just exactly that. It'll probably have an impact on two areas. Both it would be the stormwater fee itself.
With the last fee modification, we already implemented a system where we can have direct cost recovery for, you know, significant development projects.
Okay.
Great.
Okay. That's what I had.
No questions.
Okay. All righty. Just one question, and it may have been answered by city manager. If we have a situation where someone has done something which is not incidental, so it's more serious, as Councilmember Nichols described, do we fine for that? Or what happens there?
Yes, so the NPDES permit that we enrolled under has very specific requirements for enforcement. In general, the requirements are that we have a system of progressive enforcement. That is that you get a notice, there's a follow-up action and documentation. You have X number of days or hours, depending on severity, to comply. If you don't comply, there's a follow-up action that generally involves a citation and progressive fines beyond that, including and up to criminal charges.
Thank you. So I'm going to open this for public comment. Anybody want to come forward? All righty. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. Any discussion?
Nope.
Okay.
I think Mr. Nichols said it all.
Yeah, ditto.
Well, I'll be the bad person then, and I'll move for staff's recommendation.
I'll second that.
So moved by Councilmember Marshall, seconded by Councilmember Lee. It looks like, are there two or three things we need to do here, or is it?
I think that one motion covered all three, but
does that one
Martin,
motion cover all three? We're okay with that?
Okay, so item number three is to adopt the resolution. Do you want to do that first? Is that what I heard?
I think we do.
The sequence is up to you, but
okay. Separate actions for each three. Okay, well, I'll move for item number one to introduce and conduct. I move that we recommend, take staff's recommendation to introduce and conduct first reading of the ordinance by title only, amending Grover Beach Municipal Code Article 9, Development Code, Municipal Code Article 5, Sanitation Health, and Chapter 6, and Municipal Code Article 8, Building Regulations, Chapter 4, Grading.
And I'll still second that.
And Section 8, Stormwater Construction and Post-Construction Management.
And I'll second that as well.
Great. Same again. Holds. Councilmember Marshall and Lee seconding. And could we have a roll call, please?
Yes.
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 Yes. We've been at this for 2.5 hours. Does anybody need a break before we move on?
If you don't mind me just sniffing my nose, I can keep going.
Okay.
Sorry about
Sniff
that.
On.
Sniff on.
Agenda item number three, then, second reading and adoption of the ordinance amending the building code regulations, and that will be presented by Community Development Director Buckingham.
Mayor, members of the City Council, at the last council meeting, the council introduced and conducted a first reading by title only an ordinance which would amend the Grover Beach Municipal Code to incorporate and adopt the 2013 California Building Code and the 2012 International Property Maintenance Code. As discussed at the last meeting, the state mandates every 3 years we update the building code. The new 2013 building code will become effective statewide January 1st of 2014. The proposed ordinance will amend the municipal code to reference that state mandated building code. Therefore, we recommend the council conduct public hearing, a second reading of the ordinance by title only, and adopt the amendment to the municipal code. That concludes staff's report.
Thank you. Brief and to the point. Any questions?
I like that staff.
Yeah. Any questions? I will open public comment, seeing there's no one out there. No one can come forward, so I'm going to close it again. And if there's not any discussion, we'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we, where are we? We adopt the ordinance to delete article, is that where I am? We adopt the ordinance to delete Article 6, Public Safety, Chapter 1, California Fire Code, and repeal and replace Article 8, Building Regulations, Chapter 1, Building Code, to adopt the 2013 California Building Codes and the 2012 International Property Maintenance Code.
And I'll second that.
So moved by Mayor Pro Tem Bright, seconded by a Council Member Lee. Could we have the roll call, please?
Yes.
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 Yes. Unanimous again.
That advisement came before, after the agenda has been prepared and distributed. It does require us to react to that position by the 5th, and we will not have a City Council meeting by the 5th. So in order to discuss this with you in closed session, I would like you to consider adding that to the agenda. And the item would be same as item 2 from the November 4th meeting, which is conference with legal counsel and existing litigation under Government Code Section 54956.9D1, Regional Water Quality Control Board versus City of Grover Beach, complaint number R32013-0039. And in order to put it on the agenda, it would require a supermajority vote.
So you need four of us voting? It's a yes vote of four.
Yes, the vote of four. Okay. That's correct.
So all right. We need to make a motion to do that? Yeah. I'll make a motion that we add that to the closed session agenda.
I'll second.
Moved by Mayor Pro Tem Bright, seconded by Council Member Marshall. Do we need a roll call for that one?
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Yes.
Council Member Marshall?
Yes.
Council Member Lee?
Yes.
Council Member Nichols?
Yes.
And Mayor
Yes. So just to clarify, this is an urgency unanimous, and we are going to add conference with legal counsel existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9D1, Regional Water Control Board versus City of Grover Beach, complaint number R3-2013-0039.
That's correct. Okay. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council Members.
And can we Thanks. Say no more than 10 minutes?
Too late. We already voted.
I know. Darn.
So back to the consent agenda. It sounds like no one wishes to remove anything from that.
So I'll make a motion then that we approve the consent agenda items as listed or... Well, I can't say this.
Presented.
But thank you.
I'll second that.
Moved by Mayor Pro Tem Bright, seconded by Council Member Nichols. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. No one opposed? Unanimous. So now we're on to regular business. And we are going to discuss email accessibility for elected officials. And our Assistant City Manager Copsey will present that.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the council. As you know, in May, the city received a grand jury report, outlined some issues that they felt the city email accessibility to city government. The report identified that our city had email policy. The police department has had a policy for quite some time on email usage, but it has not been citywide. The policy is drafted in a final, somewhat final version. We still need to meet with a union groups to finalize that and to meet and consult. Staff expects a policy to establish the purpose and scope and definitions, the right of privacy, some prohibited uses, and the management of the emails. A city email is no less a part of official city business than any other written correspondence that we do. Good judgment and common sense usually prevails for city email messages. It's subject to disclosure under the Public Records Act and subject to requirements of the Brown Act. While the Brown Act does not prohibit use of emails to contact members of the council, great care should be taken to avoid conflicts and avoid the use of email to contact majority of council members or interaction between council members to try and make decisions on issues and things like that. And that will be outlined in the policy as well. If an email message, including any attachment, is considered an official record, such emails should be printed in hard copy and filed in accordance with city records retention policy. Should the council authorize moving forward with implementation of the assignment of email addresses to elected officials, staff will work with each council member as necessary regarding the different processes available to access the city's email system. And those will be either through your home computer, through your personal computer device, phone, or whatever, and how we can log that in and set that up so it's done automatically. It will no longer be necessary for staff to forward emails to council members as they will have their own email addresses. Should the member of the public wish to send an email to all council members, we will still have an all city council member group email address listed in the web page that can be used. There is a minimal fiscal impact with this as we will have to set up some different things, different icons and stuff like that on the website for access. And there will be a cost of approximately $600 staff time improvements to the city's website and approximately $350 for updated business cards should that be elected to add that email address to business cards for the elected officials. So total approximate cost is less than $1,000 for that. So at this point, if is recommend
$150, I'm assuming that's basically like a one-time startup cost?
Yes, that would be.
Okay, is there any...
Just to change some minor changes on the website, staff time to do that, and should we, you know, update business cards, we could wait to do that, you know, so that could be done when needed, so that would reduce that cost. But if we were to do all the business cards now, and then it would just be when we did it, you know, it wouldn't be additional, no repetitive cost.
So no recurring or repetitive cost. Okay, great. Thanks.
Any other questions?
No.
I had a couple of questions. Just technicalities. I know all of us are currently probably receiving emails from the committees we sit on. So whose responsibility is it to notify them of the change in email address?
We can do that. We can send out notifications to them. And if you're still getting one on your home email, you can notify them that way.
Okay.
But all of the that's part of the staff time, if I'm not correct, Donna. We can notify them of the change of email addresses when we get that. That's not hard.
And then next question. Apparently, we'll be able to log into the city's email in order to pick up our emails, but we can also have them forwarded to us.
Yes.
And the city will retain a copy. If they're forwarded us to and we respond, is it coming back from me, Peterson team at charter.net, or does it come back? Is the response address going to be?
If you're accessing the city's web and the city's email system, it will always be the city's email system.
Okay.
So whether you reply or respond or somebody responds back to you, it comes through the city's exchange server. And the records are kept within the city's exchange server. If you take that, forward it to peterson.com, then you start responding from that, we won't retain that. But if you're forwarding from the city email system, it will always be retained there. You won't have to worry about retaining that.
So if it were forwarded to our personal email addresses, then we would have the option of CCing the city so that they would have a copy of it.
Well, the concept is not to forward it to your personal email system. The concept is that you use the city's
email system.
You can access that from your home computer. You're still using the city's email system. Or from your phone, you're still using the city's email system. So you would have potentially two email systems on your phone.
Or, in my case, three.
I've got four. So, I mean, it's, you know, it really depends on how you want to access. Or not. Mm-hmm. You could not have it on your phone. You can just access it from a home computer or laptop or whatever through the city's website.
So, if we can do that on our further discussion or a motion.
I'll move staff's recommendation that we move forward. And authorize the city manager to move forward with implementation.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Moved by Councilmember Lee, seconded by Councilmember Nichols.
And I'm assuming that's going to be a roll call. No, it's a voice vote's good? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Unanimous. Okie dokie. So, next on our agenda is our council committee reports. Starting again with Mayor Pro Tem Bright. Did you have anything to report?
And you know, I do, and I am ashamed to say I left my notes in my hurry to get here. I had two meetings, and I don't have my notes with me.
Do you want to do that next time then?
Yes, I would.
Okay, alrighty. We'll move to next time. And Council Member Lee.
Thank you. I had a couple of committee assignments or meetings, and one of which was the Chamber of Commerce. I went to several public events. I did not get to the luncheon, so hopefully you'll be able to fill us in on that, where Mr. Conlon spoke. But the IWMA, or the Integrated Waste Management Authority, did meet and had a first quarter review of the expenses and income, and they're actually tracking a slightly ahead on income versus expenses. The only major discussion item was that the food composting facility has run into a slight snag with the group that's doing the study on it, but they hope to have that addressed and come back forward with a possibility of moving forward with a food composting facility out by the San Luis Airport. So I'll update you on that as it moves forward. And then the Visit San Luis Obispo committee did meet, and they did have a meeting this past Monday, the sustainable funding meeting, and I'll update you more on that the next time. But the one item I wanted to bring forward from the Visit San Luis Obispo County was the SAVER event. The financials came back and the outcome, and it had a more lengthy discussion of that. And the event did not break even. So there was an investment as the committee kind of put it forward. They kind of attributed it to a number of events that, as you probably saw, there was a number of special events. This is a much stronger month from them for hotel wise. So they're thinking that some of that marketing that was done for the SAVER event is actually cascading down into the hotels and into the community that way. So while yes, the event itself was an investment, there's a thought that the trickle down economics, as someone may call it, was an overall benefit to the community. The SAVER folks and Sunset folks are very high on the event and have made it their signature event for the local community, and are very behind going forward next year. So preliminarily, the group did move forward with planning for next year's event already, with the caveat and the understanding that at some point in the very near future, this event needs to break even and or make money.
Yes. The Chamber of Commerce, I wasn't able to get there to hear Chris Conlon, who is Colonel Conlon, second in command at the OHV Division of State Parks. I heard that it was the best speaker they'd ever had, and that was from the chief executive there. But you were there, Councilmember Bright.
And Bill was there as well.
Did you all have anything you wanted to say on that one? Or no need to, just thought if...
No, I think he did an outstanding job. Well done. I think there were some good questions asked of him. It was well worthwhile. Glad I went.
Good. Thank you.
Ditto.
Great. And along with the Chamber of Commerce, their next meeting in December is going to be a conversation on the benefits of being a charter city. So that's something that might be of interest to us and to the rest of the community. But I don't remember what date that is.
December
11th. Okay.
And do we have a time on that?
It's at noon.
At noon,
it is at
yeah.
noon. Okay.
I will be there.
Good. I would encourage all council members to be there. Judith Bean, who has been heading up the committee for the charter measure in Rio Grande, will be on the panel. And Steve Lieberman, who chaired the committee that we put together, will also be on the panel. I can't remember.
Russell. Is it Johnson from Bakersfield, if I'm not mistaken?
That is correct. He's the one gentleman from Bakersfield that helped us work on our charter measure last year, or last election. So he is going.
I believe it was for Capslow. Is that? Am I probably oversimplifying that? Thank you for being my memory tonight.
I'll try. I don't have notes with me either, but basically it was wasn't a real long meeting, but it was they made a decision on several grant issues. Several of the Capslow was one. That dealt with both the Prado Day Center, Maxine Lewis, Echo up in Atascadero, and several other, off the top of my head, I can't link, was one of the groups that serve homeless issues mm-hmm. within the county, and it was for a variety of grant funding that will be recommended to the Board of Supervisors for approval.
And thank you for jogging my memory there. Some of it was the CDBG funds, community development block grants, and the home funding. And another grant funding source through the federal government that that was coming forward. And they do have a possibility of another grant that may be coming forward in before February. So there may actually be a meeting in January to basically authorize the board to make that finding, or excuse me, to make that grant application. So.
Thank you. And Councilmember Nichols.
We did have the Five Cities Fire Authority meeting, and basically the only thing I have to report out of that is that the Santa Run will continue this year, and we're back with the open fire engine. What is his name? Sean Scher, who owns that antique fire engine. He has agreed to let us use that because the other fire engine still has a brake problem. We have Santa all lined up, and on the 4th, it will be on North Grover Beach Run. On the 5th, it will be South Grover Beach Run, and on the 6th, it will be in Oceano.
Cool.
The fire department's all wired up for that.
Santa doesn't go to AG?
Santa
no. doesn't go to Arroyo Grande?
No, well, it's not scheduled now because it's never been done before. These are the only communities where it has been done and where it's been requested that it be continued.
Oh, we're lucky. Good.
Yes, we are lucky.
And a quick question on that. Will Santa be joining us on the parade on Saturday?
Yes.
Okay.
I think, as far as I know, yes.
Oh, yes.
And it will be Grover Cox, will it not?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yeah,
no. Santa's Santa.
Grover Cox is the perennial Santa. In fact, I had a meeting. Well, I didn't have a meeting. I stopped to talk.
Going backwards, will all children please cover your ears?
I know. It's a good thing it's after 9 o'clock.
That we might not get you all in the pickup, but this way we'll all get you in the trolley. And you please feel free to encourage extended family members to ride along with you. Certainly would like to fill up the trolley as much as possible. You need to have everybody up there. Just as a reminder, by 9 a.m., roughly, the parade gets off at 10. That'll be followed. Following the parade is the Santa's Village, and Santa will also be present up there at Ramona for the duration of the day. Santa's Village runs from the completion of the parade until the tree lighting ceremony, which will take place at 5.
Are we going to have snow?
No snow this
okay.
year.
But may I say that I did some of my very best Christmas shopping at the Santa's Village okay. last year and the year before.
Good.
Yeah, me too. So that is on the Saturday the 4th, and then and Santa's going to be in North Grover on the 4th that evening.
Well,
after
actually, the parade is Wednesday is the 4th.
Oh gosh,
you're correct.
You're right.
That.
Wake up.
So
yeah.
He will be
right
Wednesday the 4th.
So that's 2 days from now. Santa's
yes,
coming.
Yes.
Okay.
And then the parade is of course this Saturday, which
okay.
is the 7th, I believe.
So Wednesday the 4th, he's in North Grover, and then Thursday the 5th, he's in South Grover, and then he's at the parade, and then he's going to come to the tree lighting.
Right.
Busy Santa. Okay. And I'm sorry, Councilmember Nichols, did you have anything else to report?
Nope.
Okay.
That's it.
All righty. And so then it comes to me. The Air Pollution Control District did meet. There's not a lot to report. That's anything new that I
can remember, so I don't have too much to say on that one. It's business as usual. And then the Economic Vitality Corporation was the economic update, and I did want to just run through a couple of more things on that because they're relevant to us in terms of some of the planning that we do for the future, but also that out of there. Also, in terms of what we may be able to expect in terms of income, and what they're telling us is what we know already. Things are getting better. That's obvious. But one example to me of how they're getting better is that at Vaughn's this weekend in Starbucks, they ran out of coffee cups. Reduction in defaults on mortgages, which is great. In foreclosures, same again. 47.6% fewer foreclosures this year, which is great news. And then on home price appreciation, it was predicted that it will average 15% through 2013, which is good because that means we'll get a little bit more money since our property taxes are mm-hmm. generating the most. It lags behind, so we may not see too much of it this year, but we will start to see some increases, which will be helpful. And they're expecting a 13% increase in 2014 and then maybe moderate back to 5 to 7% in 2015 and 16 as the market rebounds. Then on to jobs, we're going to be a big contributor in that, and I don't know if they actually counted that in when we get the hotel started, but they're saying it has been a robust recovery and that San Luis Obispo is one of only four metropolitan areas in the state that's added back all of the jobs it lost during the Great Recession, and the others are San Francisco, San Jose, and Bakersfield, and we've added an additional 200 in the county. So that's great news. Also on the job market, they pointed out how much the wine industry and agricultural tourism, and that's Savor the Central Coast, right, is that same thing, how much they're intertwined. Because in addition to just growing wines growing vines and making wine out of them, there are ancillary businesses coming up, and they're not even so ancillary. The biggest manufacturing increase in workers, with over 1,500 workers, is the beverage manufacturing sector, and it's a manufacturing subsector, but it's the biggest, and that's to do with wine production. So our tourism, our wine production, our ag are all intertwined and all really critical to our economy. And they did state that San Luis Obispo has experienced one of the strongest bounces in jobs across the state of California. The one disappointment was that although our sales tax, and this is on page 44 at the bottom, although our sales tax has increased since in the last 2 years, it actually has gone down a little bit from last year. So that's something that we want to bear in mind in terms of making policy, that it's really critical that we continue to support anybody who's, because sales tax is number two in what contributes, right, to the city's single family home median prices. So prices went up 17.1% in Grover, and the number of homes sold was up 28.4%. That's a very good sign for us. Mm-hmm. And our foreclosures were way down.
Well, and that's the highest, yeah, in the county, wasn't it?
I think there was someone who was 15% down at the bottom of that list.
I mean, as far as...
Oh, no, the whole county was 15, right. Arroyo Grande was at 19% increase in their prices. But
I'm talking about residential
in terms
sales.
Of number of homes sold, yeah, we sold more, and that will help in property taxes because all of those will bump up in value. Usually when they sell, they bump up in value in terms of property taxes. So that was that, and I just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention to focus our thinking for future decisions. SLO Council of Governments is meeting Wednesday morning. Lots going on there. And South San is, we have finally reached the point where I believe that we are going to hire a permanent part-time administrator, and that decision will be made at our meeting on Wednesday night. And I've forgotten his name, but it's the gentleman who has run the Santa Maria facility and done a sterling job down there. And so he'll be here and helping us out at this end, which I think will be super. And that's all as far as committee reports. Council communications. Anybody have anything to report on council communications?
Only one thing.
I would like to publicly acknowledge Chief Copsey and the letter that we got from Judith Bean of the Chamber and the assistance that Chief gave her during the Stone Soup Festival, if I'm not mistaken, how pleased she was, how grateful she was, and how successful that booth was, I guess, because of your efforts. And I think you need to be recognized for that. And therefore, I thank you very much, and a good job done.
Yeah. Good. Thanks for mentioning that. Yeah, she said that Chief Copsey was the most helpful chief she'd ever worked with. Just good to hear. I thought it might be helpful to talk just a little bit about some of the upcoming things. We've mentioned a few of them. I'm going to be speaking to the Realtors Association on Friday morning. They want to hear about streets, and that's very timely. I didn't really do it this way on purpose, but it worked out nicely because our next meeting on December 9th is a workshop on the streets, and so we do want the public to various committees, and we all received notice that if we wanted to be on any of them, we could say so. And I had joined the Women's Caucus on the League of Cities, and they've appointed me to their Housing and Economic Development Policy Committee, so I'm really excited because that'll be women in economic development. And then also have been appointed as a division representative to the Administration League Policy Committee. So that means I'll be in Sacramento a little bit more, a couple of days longer when we go up there, but I think it'll be really interesting. And if you all have anything you want me to take up there with me, I'll be glad to speak to anything you'd like. So we talked about Santa. And next meeting, just a little advertisement. It hasn't been agendized yet, but it looks like, are we going to hear about fiber optic networks?
No, that will January. Probably be off into January.
Okay, all righty. So, but we will be doing a presentation, I believe, to a World War II veteran who was awarded a special trip to the East Coast. So I'm looking forward to that, especially with December 7th coming up soon. And I believe that's all. It's been a good meeting. We finally have a hotel that's entitled, we're done, until we get it built. So we're going to recess now to closed session. Oh, sorry, we don't have city manager. Did you have a report?
Just a couple of things to note. You're going to the SLOCOG meeting on Wednesday, and you will be, I believe, voting on a couple of projects that are of importance to Grover Beach.
Thank you.
One of those is actually funding for Oak Park, and we've received the technical advisory committee's recommendation for that funding. I think, Greg, it's one point, the funding for Oak Park, was that like 1.2?
I think it
was 1.6, and actually the other major project that we're looking at receiving funding for is the train expansion project, and that's at 1.2, and I believe that's the way it broke out.
And that's for actually carrying out the project?
Yeah. Greg?
Yeah, that would be, let's hear about it.
I might mention on the train expansion project, the recommendation is basically for full funding, so a singular transit up there. So.
Good timing.
Finally, Madam Mayor, members of the council, just to alert you, the Charter Committee is expected to make their report at the next meeting.
On December 16th.
Right.
Great. Good. Lots of stuff going on. And I wanted to mention, too, that there had been a letter from Captive Hearts who were on Main Street asking for funds, and unfortunately we don't have funds. But I did want to put it out there because she was the Citizen of the Year last year, and so if anybody does have any spare cash over Christmas, they could use some support. We weren't able to do anything, but and I wrote back without bringing it to the council just because I felt like they needed to hear from us on that. So
I'm so glad you did that, because as a matter of fact, I was going to talk to Bob or someone, because I thought, because in her letter she said, I understand that your city has money at the end of the year. I'm thinking, we do.
We wish. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we said, no, we don't have any money, but we'll tell everybody else who might.
Very good.
So, City Attorney, did you have any reports? Would you like to announce our closed session?
Certainly. The City Council intends to meet in closed session on three items, the first one being a real property negotiations with a Pacific company, second, anticipated litigation, one potential case, and the third, one added on the special vote, will be existing litigation, RWQCB versus City of Grover Beach. It's an administrative complaint.
Okay, we will recess to closed session. We'll be back.